Hello, I'm Dan Masterson, host of Strategy Talk, where we take a unique view of world events. We report news as history. With me today is the editor of StrategyPage.com and well-known military author, Jim Dunnigan. Associate editor and syndicated columnist, Austin Bay, also joins us.
Welcome, Jim and Austin. Last week, I sort of thought maybe Strategy Page was being targeted by the North Koreans since they had put Austin on the list. I didn't know if they were personally targeting Austin Bay or Austin, Texas, where both Austin and Alnofi live. I didn't see New York or Salt Lake City on the list, though, Jim, so apparently we're safe.
They're suspicious.
So, yeah. But anyhow, the North Koreans have got the cauldron bubbling and boiling over there on the Pacific Rim. What's the current status of where things are, Jim?
Well, as we reported today in Strategy Page, over the last few days, actually since last weekend, the North Koreans have very quietly taken their troops off alert. I mean, we did a piece last week called, the Ministry of Intimidation Works Overtime or something like that. And, this is an old drill with the North Koreans. When I was over there in the Army 50 years ago, they were spouting this kind of stuff. Now, all us young teenage troops were kind of nervous about this, but, after half a century, you learn to live with it. The problem is the media, the mass media in particular, has no memory. So they don't remember stuff like that. And if you do remember stuff like that, you'll note that there's a pattern to all this. They make outrageous statements because they know that'll get them, in the news. If they can push enough buttons, they'll get a reward. Free food, free oil, free whatever, some meaningless concession, that anything is something to them. So all the pundits are trying to figure out, why are they going so far this time? Because basically they have made more demands and more, threats than ever before. They have, in effect, broken the records. They've never, canceled the ceasefire that was signed in 1953. By the way, the DMZ has been quiet. There's been no activity up there. So what is going on, if you step back and look at the big picture, you'll note that they're talking a mean game, but they're doing nothing. There was one South Korean report that the South Korean Navy had lost track of two submarines, but when I did the math, the two little mini subs were lost track of about at the time they'd have to go back in. In other words, these boats can only stay out for a few days. So that might have been the reason for that. I don't know. This was just, South Korean media, trying to, up the tension a little bit, just to sell newspapers. So we're basically falling back on that all this theater is being done primarily for internal political purposes in North Korea. That's the one that makes the most sense because, as we've said many times in the last 10 years that we've been reporting this, North Korea or the North Korean leadership cannot afford to go to war. Because if it goes to full-out war, they will lose. There's really been no doubt about that for over half a century. They lost big time in 1950, and since then, the South Koreans are way more prepared, especially in the last 10 years, than they have ever been in the past. And, of course, the United States is pretty much tired of this nonsense. We've spent billions of dollars, since the ceasefire in 1953, maintaining troops over there, even though the South Koreans pick up a lot of the tab these days. We've heard this song before, and it makes as little sense now as it did 50 years ago. So as far as we can tell, it's partially Kim Jong-un, the 29 or 30-year-old, young general, as they call him there, or the gift from heaven is another nickname they've given him officially. The people of South Korea have been scribbling more graffiti and risking, death or, the labor camps, which is often the same thing, to do this. And what they're saying is, I guess we can't really, this is a G-rated radio show. They're calling him rather more coarse names. But he is apparently trying to establish himself among the various factions in the government, the pro-Chinese, the pro-economic reform, the old school, the pro-military, pro-economic development. You know, there are several factions within the senior leadership because nothing is working. Nothing they've tried in the last 20 years seems to work. And even the leaders are getting fairly desperate. Again, as we've reported, there's more and more news coming out of China about senior North Korean officials making quiet arrangements to get out of Dodge, you know, if things go south in a hurry. So this is all Kim Jong-un trying to improve his internal support, at least among the elite, and partially the mass media, you know, falling for this game as they have for over 50 years. So there's not much there.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that I noticed and picked up on over the last couple of weeks was the U.S. response to all of this. As both of you know, part of my job is to go through and find interesting photos to put on the site. And the U.S. Navy had run a huge number of photos of taking South Korean officials on tours of the destroyers and the other craft that they had brought in for demonstration purposes, and you know, the B-2 being over there was a little bit unprecedented. Austin, have you picked up on any of this?
Well, look, yes, we're doing some things that we have done in the past, where the political and diplomatic reaction has been to remain calm, insistently calm. We saw this reaction from Bush 1 and the Clinton administration, Bush 2 with Al-Qaeda, and 9/11 had multiple large issues to deal with. They managed well, I think, diplomatically and politically with the interest group that was brought together to try to deal with the threats that North Korea was making. In other words, it was definitely on a back burner in terms of media coverage and quote-unquote administration focus, and yet there were some real, I would say that the George W. Bush's administration in pursuing that, yeah, it's back burner, we're dealing with these guys, and as Jim described quite well, their long legacy of threats and intimidation. I'm going to come back to that in a moment. But having the interest group that included South Korea, Japan, Russia, China, the U.S., and North Korea, sometimes it would be called the Six Nations or Six Nation Conference or something similar. But to try to nudge forward a process to stop North Korea's nuclear program. And understand that there's still a great deal of legitimate concern about that. Just because of the theatrics, pursuing a nuclear weapon and pursuing a ballistic missile delivery system are they're pursuing capabilities. And then the Obama administration has followed through with the same diplomatic and political response. What is interesting, as Jim said, they have really pulled out all the stops in the last really 2.5 years, not quite three, but last 2.5 years or so, where the rhetoric has gotten more shrill. Some of that had to do with the personalities involved, Kim Jong-il being ill and dying, and a succession process inside North Korea. Who succeeds the dictator? Well, from the get-go, in the Quick and Dirty Guide to War series, Jim's described North Korea as a hereditary dictatorship. Well, which of the sons? And if you go back and look at classic successions in absolute monarchies, there can be a heck of a lot of blood spilled around, so they wanted to avoid that. Kim Jong-un was the blessed one. Did you say gift from heaven, Jim, is what they were calling him?
Yeah.
Gift from heaven that they're not having fratricidal chaos, at least yet. But so some of that is exactly as Jim is saying about the domestic focus of the rhetoric, saber rattling, and I would call them bellicose demonstrations for their army, for their people, and for the various factions that do exist within the North Korean regime. Now, here's where there has been some change, Dan. On the U.S. response, it's not that we haven't insistently demonstrated our will to fulfill our commitments as South Korea's ally. We learned the hard way the mistake of failing to do that, both rhetorically and in terms of the demonstration of capabilities, because one of the reasons that cited that Kim Il-sung, Kim Jong-un's grandfather and the granddaddy dictator, launched the Korean War in June of 1950 is that there was some uncertainty, including in Moscow and Stalin's regime, about where the U.S. quote-unquote line of defense began, because there had been a statement out of the U.S. State Department indicating that it ran through the straits between Japan and Korea. Well, it really didn't. We demonstrated that with Task Force Smith and that sad incident in 1950, and we demonstrated by the air and naval response, and then subsequently our defense of the Pusan perimeter, but we did that in extremis. And since then, we have not only backed up the South Koreans, as the South Koreans began to assume larger and larger responsibility for their own self-defense, and that really becomes evident in the early 1990s. Jim said last decade, but the decade of the 90s, you saw the South Korean army really modernize. Always disciplined. The ROKs after 1960s on, highly disciplined force, but they new weapons and the like, and assuming more of their own conventional defense. But we're backing them up with our air and naval and then our own ground forces as required. And our exercises that were being carried out, annual exercises, administration goes through with those, but there were a couple of not-so-subtle additions in response to this rhetorical excess from the North Koreans. And one of them was the Obama administration saying, we want more ground-based interceptors, GBIs, which is the long-range missile component of our missile defense system. That was a lot of backtracking on the Obama administration's part, but it's the right move. The right move. And the other one that you said, B-2s, look, we have B-2s. B-2s fly missions out of Missouri, out of Whiteman all the time, global missions, some of them active to Afghanistan and certainly Libya. The B-2s were involved in Libya in 2011. We have that capability. The North Koreans use the B-2s demonstration of capability. And look, why do we know about it? Well, the Air Force told you about it. We knew that they would come over there, and they were part of the exercise. They used this as a approximate cause for some of their theatrics to include threatening, as you led off the program with Honolulu, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., and Austin, Texas, the missile tracks that showed up in Rodong, which is their one of their the Korean Workers' Party's propaganda organ on the 29th of March. Now they've been all photos been all over the world since then, and that's where they see those missile tracks, which going to those cities. The B-2s have an array of weapons, and Jim can speak authoritatively on this, that they're not the only delivery means we have for these weapons. But they can launch a flock, Dan, of deep penetration smart weapons that are designed to take out command and control facilities. And heavens, the picture of Kim Jong-un that showed up in Rodong was in a secret, top-secret command and control facility. That's what B-2s can carry. They can also carry these weapons that knock out storage sites for special weapons, chemical and nuclear weapons, and the like. So there's a message with that. It doesn't have to come from B-2s. We got B-52s sitting down there on Guam. The Navy can deliver all kinds of these weapons. And one of the things that the Chinese are paying close attention to is the response by the Japanese and South Koreans who said, we want our own offensive capability to deal with these nuts. If they're going to threaten us and they're going after capabilities, and even though they keep up the theatrics, Dan, and this is the thing is important to stress, sometimes the theatrics have also been backed up by war making. I know it's heavy machine guns shooting at 2nd Infantry Division troops in some of these bellicose moments in the 60s. And Jim, as I recall, some of you guys over there got some combat patches a few times when you got shot at by these guys. And they shelled Yongkyong Island in November of 2010, killed some civilians, blew up a shopping center. They sunk the Chonan, the Corvette, the South Korean naval Corvette, in March of 2010. Killed 46 sailors, put down a major vessel in the South Korean Navy, sank it. They do these things. They're acts of war. South Korea didn't go to war. It held its mud. They're getting tired of that, Dan, and it's the South Koreans are tired of it, the Japanese are tired of it, and the Chinese who have backed North Korea. Here's another reading. I do agree with Jim that this is a domestic display, but to some level, the North Koreans and the regime is aware that Chinese support is not, in 2013, is not what Chinese support was in 2003. Definitely not what it was in 1993, when Kim Il Sung was still alive. It's changing, and there are some reads out there by several commentators, and not new. I saw some of this actually beginning of the last decade. North Korea testing Chinese support. They know what Jim said is true, that their senior North Korean members of the regime who might run to China. Now, those are rumors. Well, who are they? Well, they may know, they may not know. Why would they go to China? And then what happens? What happens with the Kim regime? Does China engineer a change? I mean, these are some of the other more speculative bits. So I can't look. The bottom line is the U.S. is doing what it's done in the past, but you're seeing changes in South Korea, changes in Japan, and our own rising concern, a legitimate concern because of increased capabilities of those missiles. They can already hit Guam, which is why the Terminal High Altitude Air Defense System, THAAD, as it's called, I believe it was THAAD, that was sent to Guam, why you see Standard 3s on Navy Aegis ships, and our missile defense system being slowly upgraded. It's to try to have at least some thin shield defense against those North Korean capabilities.
Yep. Jim, one of the things I'm interested in is China and how China's being drawn into all this. I read a report last week that, or actually early this week, that the Chinese had actually increased the number of troops on the border. What is China's whole stand in all of this?
Well, since the end of the Cold War in 1991, when the North Korean economy went south because they lost the Russian subsidies, China has regarded the, how should I put it, the antics of North Korea to be semi-useful. In other words, it annoys the Americans, it keeps, South Korea in a compliant mood, because South Korea is now a major trading partner, you know, sending and receiving goods, you know, to China in a big way. But in the last 10 years, North Korea has become a liability for China. And now, with this nuclear weapons development and three nuclear weapons tests, especially the last one, China is becoming more open about its displeasure with North Korea. Now, the two countries are bound by several treaties dating back to the Chinese intervention in 1950 when they came to the rescue of North Korea, which was about to be, you know, completely occupied by the United States. And they do have a mutual defense agreement, which technically means that if North Korea gets into a war with someone else like South Korea, China will intervene. But China has apparently let it be known and let this leak that their diplomats have told the North Koreans that you cannot expect automatic support from China if you get yourself into a war. Now, that brings up the other things that China has been apparently doing. They have been pushing North Korea in more and more, stern, terms to basically undergo economic reformation, similar to what China went through in the 1980s. Now, the North Koreans came back saying, well, we're not China. Koreans are very touchy about that, not being China, not being Japan or anybody else for that matter. And I pointed out that their situation is different, and they don't go public with the details, but the details are they're basically afraid that their people, once they become a little more affluent, they'll murder the people who've kept them in slavery, as it were, for the last 50 years. Chinese basically poo-poo. They say, look, we'll back you, we'll basically protect the leadership, et cetera, et cetera. But there are factions within the North Korean leadership that basically either don't believe that or don't want that. One thing that outsiders have a hard time comprehending is that 50 years of brainwashing, and the brainwashing is not pro-communist brainwashing, although North Korea, the North Korean Workers' Party, not Communist Party, but Workers' Party, is socialist for all intents and purposes. And the government is a socialist dictatorship.
Yeah.
It operates like a communist dictatorship, central planning, no, very little private property and things like that. But the main theme in this half century of indoctrination is nationalism, that Koreans are the finest people in the world, that nobody has it good if they're not Korean, et cetera, et cetera. This plays well to Koreans who have not had a good time in the last century. Before World War II, starting in the early, in late 19th century and into 1905, they were literally a colony of the hated Japanese. Now, I say hated because I've been there and I've been in touch with Koreans since then. They do not like the Japanese. Less publicized is the fact that they do not like the Chinese. They're like the Poles, caught between the Russians and the Germans. What's to love? Nothing. And as a consequence, they don't like taking advice from China, and they don't like basically emulating China. That's why after the Korean War, they slowly backed away from being communists. And this didn't get much publicity in the West, because who cares? It looks like a communist, it talks like a communist, they must be communists. No, no, they're not. And they're very reluctant to basically be perceived as a satellite of China. And this aggravates the Chinese no end, but they've learned to live with it because they understand. I mean, give the Chinese credit. They want to dominate their neighborhood, but they understand that they are not, well, actually they're hated by many of their neighbors. And it's something you got to deal with. That the Chinese are pretty smooth in that respect. But the Chinese have apparently been trying to buck up a pro-China faction within the Korean government. And apparently many of the senior North Korean officials who disappear or are executed publicly were not being killed because of they screwed up, you know, this, that, or the other thing, but because they were suspected of being a little too pro-Chinese or pro-Chinese, period. I don't know. I mean, basically, there's a lot of ways you can get in big trouble in North Korea, and being pro-Chinese is one of many. But the bottom line is the North Koreans can be very hostile to their only friend. I was going to say best friend, but there is no best friend. China is the only one who's still supplying them with oil and food, and allowing them to smuggle other things in if they have the money to pay for it, and smuggle things out like their drugs, their illegal drugs, their counterfeit currency, et cetera, and nuclear technology, which they sell to other people. One thing the Chinese have done recently is they've increased border inspections, and they're not letting forbidden items in, which in the past would say, hey, you know, we got no problem with you getting this machinery, which several international sanctions prohibit you from getting. And they're not letting the drugs go out. Now, the North Koreans were always pretty good about making sure the drugs went through China, not into China. We're talking about methamphetamine and I think heroin, but mainly the meth. But in the last few years, North Korean meth has been showing up in northern China. Again, this doesn't get a lot of news, you know, internationally, but it's big news in China. And so over the last, I think 3 years ago, they started putting more border patrol people on the border. In the past, they felt they didn't have to because there were so many North Korean, you know, border security people. But now they're doing it in self-defense, because one thing that's been happening more frequently in the last year is North Korean border guards and soldiers are deserting, in many cases with their weapons, and sometimes in groups. And they basically get across the border and turn into bandits. Now, part of that is because these guys are ignorant about how one lives, even in a free society, but China is actually free in many ways. And they say, well, hey, I got a gun. I can get whatever I need using that. That gives you a little insight into the North Korean mentality. It's dog eat dog, especially if one dog has a gun. And so these deserters are becoming a major crime problem in northeastern China, as are the drugs, which are not supposed to, you know, stay in China, but, you know, keep going to somewhere else. So the Chinese actually have a lot of complaints about North Korea, not just the current bellicosity. And so they are cracking down not just to help the rest of the world out or South Korea out, but to help themselves. So this is why the North Koreans are gambling big time, because if they, you know, take off China too much, the Chinese can turn the spigot. Now, the Chinese option has always been, in extremis, if things really went, you know, sideways in a big way, they could simply declare an emergency and march into Korea and basically put into power a bunch of Koreans that they're certain are pro-Chinese. But again, as I just explained, the mysterious reason why they don't do this, obviously, is because the North Koreans are very anti-Chinese, very hostile to especially Chinese coming in. Because while America invaded North Korea once in 1950 in self-defense, you know, to basically chase the North as a part of chasing the North Korean invaders out of South Korea, China has invaded North Korea dozens of times. I'm talking major invasions over the last, you know, 1,000 years. So who do you hate the most? Think about it. As they say, all politics is local. And locally, China is the bigger bad than the United States or South Korea, who are basically fellow Koreans. So China is basically faced with a decision to make. Do we basically end this, you know, go all the way as it were and invade, or do we try and, again, as they've been doing for many decades, talk our way out of it? the Chinese are running out of options, just as the North Koreans are.
Austin, just to sort of finish us up, we often forget that Russia has
a border
coastline in the Pacific area.
Well, it's got a border with North Korea. Yeah.
Right. And what is their whole take on all of this? And we'll wrap it up there with you.
It's going to sound cynical. I don't see how they think they're going to make money out of this. I'm talking about the Putin government. If they could find an angle on making some money out of North Korea, you'd see some of the antics from Moscow that you see in Syria. I'm being a little bit facetious, Dan, but that's at the same time there's some truth to it. The Russians do not want a conflagration in Northeast Asia. They don't want something that they're not prepared to handle militarily or politically or economically. And they're not. They don't want something that, some of this is highly speculative. But how would you get into something that where Russian interests and Chinese interests are at odds? They're not interested in it for a variety of reasons. They don't want a nuclear war. That doesn't serve their purposes at all. And I think that's one of the reasons out of this you don't hear much from the Russians on the vis-a-vis North Korean antics. They did participate in the discussions of how to perhaps end discussions I outlined have been going on for on and off for over a decade about how nations bordering on North Korea and plus Japan and the United States can help facilitate an end to the North Korean nuclear program. One thing that I would do bring up here, I love Jim's analysis on the delicate situation the Chinese are in. I didn't think much of the WikiLeaks leak, Stan, as you and Jim both know, but I did read one about the quoting one of the senior Chinese officials in the foreign ministry. In fact, this is off the top of my head. I believe it was the foreign minister or the deputy foreign minister quoted one of those secret State Department cables that WikiLeaks released saying, "We know they're crazy," talking about North Korea. All it did was make public what we've been hearing from our own sources and Chinese for the last actually more than 10 years. Now, that's just, we know they're nuts and we know they're dangerous. And there was a quote there, with a name attached to it. And that's what Chinese diplomats were telling American diplomats. I think Jim did an excellent job, if I may say so, of showing one to some of these vices, V-I-S-E-S, that the Chinese are caught in with dealing with the regime. So there's my answer on the Russians.
Well, obviously, the area will continue to boil with trouble for some time. It may be like a rabid dog that somebody's going to have to put down at some point.
I know we didn't say this. Why did they target Austin? If people want to go read my On Point column.
Right, that's right.
It's the major Western Hemisphere facility for Samsung Electronics Corporation, and North Korea is extremely jealous of South Korea's success, and they know that. And the fact that it would even show up, is, as I point out in the column, is indicative of that. At some level, they're deeply shamed and embarrassed. It was almost a Freudian slip, so that's why.
Right. Well, thank you, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.